Fratelloni's Hardware and Garden Stores brings your Garage Logic podcast number 1,285, April 11th, 2024. 83 degrees on this day on two occasions, 1890 and 1968, and it was 12 degrees in 1940. And before I bring you the ice outs, which we'll have a dedication today, I want to remind you that if you have a lake home or a swimming pond, you know, with the rope hanging from the tree and the kids go out in the back and they launch themselves into the water, get a hold of Aquaside. Aquaside has been helping people create great lake shores and swimming areas for more than 60 years with a complete line of lake and pond control products. They take care of the algae and the weeds and all the unwanted vegetation. The products are easy. Easy to use. They work quickly. They're registered with the EPA and DNR, and those products are safe. Call Aquaside. They'll help you identify your weed problem and make sure your place looks great all summer long. Call Aquaside at 1-800-328-9350 or go to aquaside.com. And today's Ice Outs, brought to you by Aquaside, are dedicated to a fellow named Simon Steele, who is the head of the UN Climate Agency, and he's the latest mentally ill member of the UN who wants to tell us that we now have only 2 years left to save the world, but more crucially and more importantly, we have even less time to act to get the finances together behind such a massive shift in saving the world.
We must do something quickly.
Jesus God.
Well, if he wants, I can stop paying my mortgage and start writing him checks. Would that help?
Right.
And the ice outs are dedicated to Simon, as well as to Julia Fargo, who writes, "Joe, today feels and smells like one of those ozone days you've spoken about. I had experienced just what you described last year while in the Brainerd area. I was sitting by Gull Lake one morning and will never forget the sweet, fresh smell. And then a week or so ago when I was in the Twin Cities. Both times was just before you described it perfectly. You just never forget those days and that wonderful look, feel, and smell in the air and atmosphere. I am in Plymouth area, and while not quite as pronounced, it made me think of you in that particular episode. Happy spring." Thanks, Julia. Ice outs today. Minnetonka went out on this day.
April 11th.
In 1878. What's that guy's name, that phony from the UN?
Simon Steele.
Simon Steele. Minnetonka went out on this day, Simon, in 1878, 1892, 1948, 1958, 1994. White Bear Lake went out on this day in 1932, 1955. 1958, 1963, 2003, and 2009.
Wait, what did Simon say?
Hail the flashlight, King!
Hail you!
And now, from the mayor's office above the boathouse on the east shore of Spoon Lake, it's Garage Logic with Chris Reavers manning Technology Corner, Kenny Olson from the Krabby Coffee Shop, John Hite in the newsroom, and of course, the rookie. Here is your flashlight king, fireworks commissioner, and the keeper of common sense, your mayor, Joe Soucheray.
Rookie, I'm not asking you, I'm asking the others. Did everyone do their homework assignment to read the brilliant piece in Barry Weiss's Substack, written by Yuri Berliner, a longtime NPR business editor who blew the whistle on NPR and saying how they lost America's trust? And the reason we assigned it as a homework assignment is because it was certainly too long to read the entire thing on the air. But I did read it a couple of times and managed to land on what I think was the crucial reason that NPR lost the trust of the American news consumer. They certainly haven't lost the trust of all of them. They have the the extreme left still favors NPR, and that was his objection. But what he discovered is a microcosm of exactly what's happening, for example, to politics the closer you get to the country's tallest buildings. So I'm going to read four paragraphs because he nails it. Race and identity became paramount in nearly every aspect of the NPR workplace. Journalists were required to ask everyone we interviewed their race, gender, and ethnicity, and had to enter it into a centralized tracking system. We were given unconscious bias training sessions. A growing DEI staff offered regular meetings imploring us to start talking about race. Monthly dialogues were offered for women of color and men of color. Non-binary people of color were included too. These initiatives, bolstered by a $1 million grant from the NPR Foundation, came from management from the top down. Crucially, they were in sync culturally with what was happening at the grassroots among producers, reporters, and other staffers. Most visible was a burgeoning number of employee resource or affinity groups based on identity. And here's the key paragraph. So within NPR, as they began to become more DEI focused, here's what happened. Those groups included Marginalized Genders and Intersex People of Color Mentorship Program, Mi Gente, Latinx employees, NPR Noir, Black employees, Southwest Asians and North Africans at NPR, UMA for Muslim-identifying employees, Women, Gender, Expansive, and Transgender People in Technology Throughout Public Media Group, and KEVRE, a Jewish Heritage and Culture at NPR, and NPR Pride, LGBTQIA employees at NPR. Final paragraph. All this reflected a broader movement in the culture of people clustering together based on ideology or a characteristic of birth. If, as NPR's internal website suggested, the groups were simply a great way to meet like-minded colleagues and help new employees feel included, it would have been one thing. But the role and standing of the groups, including those outside NPR, was more than that. They became a priority for NPR's union, SAG-AFTRA, an item in collective bargaining. The current contract in a section on DEI requires NPR management to keep up to date with current language and style guidance from journalism affinity groups.
Wow.
And to inform employees if language differs from the diktats of these groups. In such a case, the dispute could go before the DEI Accountability Committee. So, without taking anything that Mr. Berliner wrote out of context, I would say that what NPR has done is lost the ability to be curious about news in general, and that, in fact, everything it covers would almost be tribal-based. And everything they cover would be seen through the lenses of these various groups rather than through the lens of, is this news affecting America? There you have it. And they've long ago lost my trust. But as he notes in his piece, it wasn't always like that.
Yeah, I have that paragraph.
Read that paragraph.
In 2011... although NPR's audience was tilted a bit to the left, it still bore a resemblance to America at large. 26% of listeners described themselves as conservative, 23 as middle of the road, and 37 as liberal. But by 2023, the picture was completely different. Only 11% described themselves as very or somewhat conservative.
Mm-hmm.
21% middle of the road, and 67% of listeners said that they were very or somewhat liberal.
I don't think he'll lose his job. I don't think NPR would have the this story has developed a great following, great attention. It has long legs in the world of the news sites. It's a very strongly written article. It's very factual. and exactly what's happened to NPR. I suppose you could say that in 2011, the Minneapolis City Council looked like most of America. Or the St. Paul City Council looked like most of America. In 2011, you might have been able to go around the country and say the closer you get to the country's tallest buildings, it still looks like America. Meaning, American convention was not despised. American rules, regulations, laws, and traditions were not despised. I would submit to you that today they are. And that many of these city councils, for example, the closer you get to the country's tallest buildings, do not at all reflect the America that Garage Logic talks about. Is that a fair statement?
Very fair. Absolutely. Can I just throw one thing in regarding of this? I don't like being assigned reading assignments either, G-allers, because we read so much, and some of the stuff we read is written so poorly that it's really tough to mine facts and figures and stuff out of. This thing is so well written that it's just a joy to read. You just want to savor every paragraph. It's a real easy, fun read.
It'll be interesting to know or wonder, maybe it's a guy we should try to get. Well, interesting to know and wonder how he's now being treated in the NPR newsroom. He alluded to that by saying that he's getting a few raised eyebrows.
You know? I'm worried that his presence on this program would hurt him further.
Then let's
further
not or farther? Have it.
Yeah. Further. Further.
May I read you an email about this very thing?
Yes.
This is coming to us from Clark. Mr. Mayor, on the NPR Exposed from the Inside, could this in fact be today's ray of hope?
It sure could.
Berliner Senior Business Editor Report, winner of Peabody, the Loeb Award, blah, blah, blah. An open-minded spirit no longer exists. I wonder what the Vegas over-under is for him keeping his job, always pushing back. Thank you for alerting me to this article and the homework assignment, Clark.
I think he will keep his job. I don't think they would have the courage. It would be so patently obvious for why they got rid of him, to can him. He's a multiple award winner. Apparently, he's very good at what he does on the business desk of NPR. I do not think he will lose his job. Now, he might very well, because of this, get a better offer and leave.
Sure.
But I don't think NPR would have the guts to fire him, nor should they fire him.
Go ahead, John.
I was just going to say, he is, too, still. I don't know if you saw the follow-up interview with him, where he backed NPR to an extent, because when the conservatives, Trump, everybody else started going after NPR, he said, no, I don't believe it's a misinformation news group. They still report news. And that's all he'd say. He wouldn't say anything else.
Didn't you think it was interesting, John, the way he broke down these stories that they've done in the last 3-4 years and the experts that they decided to use along the way?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The whole thing was fascinating.
Yeah. As a news junkie, it was just fascinating to read. Yeah. And I could read that about any news outlet, to be honest with you. It's just, to me,
That's correct. I'm afraid you could read that about any news outlet.
Yeah, that's because I'm a news geek and I like inside.
But most crucially to me, as I read the important paragraph, NPR is a collection of tribes, a collection of people identified only by their race or their sexual preference. That's not a reflection of America, and it's not a reflection of news gathering.
Well, the paragraphs you read made that really clear. I mean, that money that came from the top.
Yep.
You know, you've got to answer to the people with the money.
Now, I want to go down. I didn't really even get to my normal show prep today because early this morning I found myself continuing to pursue tidbit after tidbit. Earlier in the week, I believe I might have seen it on Twitter. I saw...
Hey, that's my bit.
Right.
Which is why I didn't go with it.
Oh, okay, good.
Because I won't take...
Let him finish.
I won't take news from Twitter if I don't know who's writing it. But I learned that the DFLers rejected a Republican proposal in the state legislature to tighten up the squatter situation, and all the Republicans wanted was the ability for a homeowner, upon discovering a squatter situation, I don't think it's widespread yet, all the Republicans wanted was to say that they should have the right to call the sheriff and have the squatter removed immediately. Mm-hmm. And that was met to the contrary by a Minneapolis Democrat, Zainab Mohamed, who wrote, and the DFL rejected that Republican request. Just because they do not have a documentation does not make them less than you as a human being. So the Democrats rejected the idea that a squatter should be removed immediately. And according to Zainab Mohamed, a Minneapolis DFL, a state Senate DFLer from District 63, South Minneapolis, her belief that a squatter does not make them lesser than you as a human being has nothing to do with squatting. It's a worldview that she has that's completely Marxist. It's completely anti-property ownership. I don't want to get ahead of myself because that's all I knew. Well, I found it today, or I was alerted to it. One of the guys alerted me to it. And it's from WilmerRadio.com.
WilmerRadio.com. Never heard of it.
The Star Tribune didn't have this. Nope. The St. Paul Pioneer Press didn't have this. I don't believe even Alpha News had this. But for some reason, WilmerRadio.com had a paragraph about this. Dateline, St. Paul, Minnesota. It was a straight party line vote as Democrats in the Minnesota Senate Monday, just this past Monday, rejected a Republican-sponsored measure that would have allowed a homeowner or landlord to ask the sheriff to immediately remove a squatter from their property. St. Michael Republican Eric Lucero said homeowners have left on vacation only to return and find that someone has illegally entered their house claiming that they have a lease or some right to that property. Minneapolis Democrat Zainab Mohamed, M-O-H-A-M-E-D, Mohamed, responded, "Just because they do not have a documentation does not make them lesser than you as a human being." Democrats say state law already has provisions for eviction. Republicans respond that can take months and cost homeowners or landlords thousands of dollars to regain their rightfully owned property from squatters. Now, wouldn't you say that property ownership is a fundamental, sacred convention of American life?
Yes. Some refer to it as the American dream.
I can't imagine among us there would be any doubt that property ownership, your ownership of a home, for example. Well, what's the old saying about a castle?
A home is a man's castle.
A home is a man's castle. There can be no doubt in America that property ownership is sacred. It's paramount among our vast and reasonable rights that we have as free Americans. Here comes Zainab Mohamed, who I am very comfortable in saying completely rejects that idea.
Yeah.
She completely rejects the idea that property ownership is paramount. It must have never entered her worldview to believe that or understand that. So now I thought, well, who is this gal? Who is Zainab Mohamed? So I went and looked it up. She's 26 years old. Well, she was born in 1977 on May 4th, so she's...
She's 46 years old.
No, she was born May 4th, 1997.
I think you said 77.
1997.
Okay.
So what is that? She's 27?
Yep. 26, 27.
26 or 7. She's an American politician serving as a member of the Minnesota State Senate. By the way, this is from Wikipedia, and the picture of her shows her hooded and masked.
Whoa.
Okay. A winter parka with a mask. She's a member of the DFL, of course. She represents District 63, comprising South Minneapolis and, Kenny, this says parts of Richfield, which you find not to be true on the map of District 63.
Maybe it's my interpretation of the map, but I don't see it going south of 62. Maybe it does. The map is really hard to read, Joe.
Mohammed immigrated with her family at age 9 from Somalia to the Minneapolis Powderhorn neighborhood where she grew up. In 2019, she graduated from the University of Minnesota with a degree in human resources. Okay, I would submit to you that that's a degree you can't flunk. What the hell is human resources?
But it has some legitimacy. It wasn't tree studying.
Mohammed interned for IATA Leeds, a nonprofit that seeks to support black immigrant women in political participation. While working as a community advocacy manager for the Council on American-Islamic Relations in Minnesota, she advocated for legislation relating to public safety reform, including no-knock warrants. In January 2022, she began working as a policy aide to Jason Chavez, a Minneapolis City Council member. Okay, I don't say this to be a smart aleck. She's really never done anything. She meets our definition of an activist.
Right.
She hasn't done anything. She hasn't worked for a private employer. She's never met a payroll. She's never worked outside the public realm.
Right.
All right, and she's a young gal. Patricia Torres Ray was the incumbent senator for District 63, but Patricia Torres Ray did not run for re-election in 2022. After conversations with Torres Ray and other organizers, Mohammed entered the race and was endorsed by Torres Ray. The main themes of her campaign were a statewide $15 minimum wage, universal health care, and public safety. I'm almost done. We'll have to take a short break. After defeating Todd Scott in the primary to become the DFL nominee, Mohammed won the general election against Republican nominee Sean Holster. Mohammed then joined Erin May Quaid and Claire Omu Verbeten as the first black women elected to the Minnesota Senate. She is also the youngest woman ever elected to serve in the Minnesota Senate. And we'll pick this up in a moment. I want to remind you, by the way, that Precision Garage Door is our official sponsor of our garage door opener, but it doesn't look like Friday is the day.
I don't think tomorrow's going to be the day.
And after hearing this show, you might want to consider relocating your business. Minnesota business owners pay way too much in taxes. The Tax Foundation has just released its State Business Tax Climate Index, and Sioux Falls wins. By default, right now, we're in the second worst tax situation in the country. We're in the 45th worst tax climate in the U.S. South Dakota is the second best tax climate in the nation. That's just one reason, no matter why, no matter the size of the business you own, you can increase your profits in Sioux Falls. You can go to SiouxFallsDevelopment.com. Let them fill you in. You're going to gain safer streets. I'm going to miss you, but you're going to gain safer streets, award-winning schools, short commutes, vibrant growing downtown, and a pro-business attitude. All reasons to make your move or relocate or expand. And they've got a motivated workforce ready to help your business grow. Escape the high taxes of Minnesota. Plan on Sioux Falls. Maybe 2024 is your time to move. Check it out at SiouxFallsDevelopment.com.
You know, the investment game can be awfully tricky, especially in these volatile times. And that's why you need the best and also somebody that you can trust. And that's why I rely on Josh Arnold. We know him as Mr. Money Talk around these parts, and he's here for you. So give him a call today for that free 48-minute no obligation consultation by dialing 952-925-5608. 952-925-5608. Josh has been at this a long time with a track record of success, and he's here to help you. So give him a call today. No obligation. That's right. No obligation. It's absolutely free. 952-925-5608. And tell him you heard about him here on the Garage Logic Podcast.
Investment services offered by Josh Arnold Investment Consultant, LLC, a security investment advisor. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All investments involve risk. All comments and opinions are Josh Arnold's and do not constitute investment advice.
Chris Reavers is a paid endorser. Yeah. Well, Chris, this still isn't working.
Give us a liner, Matthew.
The liner machine is still not working. Here's Joe Souchere.
Okay, GLers, I hope you can do better than the guys just did off the air. I want you to save this date, GLers, and it's coming up quick. It's Saturday, April 20th from 8 a.m. until 4 p.m. You or your kid or your grandkids are absolutely required to be at the Northfield Middle School. That's, by the way, home of the Raiders. The address is 2200 Division Street in Northfield, which, by the way, is a lovely drive on a Saturday anyway. Cool little town, Northfield.
I use 3 to go down there.
That's I love that route.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my best route, too. The reason why, this is the very next play for Patrick Heart Screening for humans aged 14 to 24. And Joe, I know you have a couple. Matthew, you've got one, 19. Yeah. Reavers, you're off the hook. The oldest is 13. But I'm talking to basically grandparents right now because I know you can guilt your grandkids into doing this. Mike Schoonover from Schoonover Body Works and Auto Care. This is his baby. Unfortunately, he can't be with us today because he's doing a favor for his mom. But I want to talk about what to expect when you go there. What potential participants have to know ahead of time. And first of all, you should get to the website before you do anything. playforpatrick.org. There's some online paperwork that the patient should fill out, print that out, and then bring it to the event. The entire process, once you're there, take about an hour, and a lot of things are going to be happening very quickly. First, you're going to get the height and weight thing. Then they're going to check your blood pressure. Then they're going to do the EKG, which is kind of cool. They put stickies on your chest, listen to your heart. Yeah. And then it's the fun one, the echo test. Once the echo test is done, you go off to training, CPR and AED training. Basically, that's life-saving education. But for my money, like I said, the echo is so fun. First of all, they grease you up, and then they slide that mouse thing all over your chest, and you can see your heart beating. It's really cool.
Wow.
Yeah, you'll actually enjoy that. And if they discover some abnormalities, you will get sent to your own personal doctor with recommendations of a follow-up visit and more tests, et cetera, et cetera. All of this is happening April 20th, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Northfield Middle School. Grandparents, I'm telling you right now, just guilt them into going. It's 2200 Division Street. Meanwhile, in other news, if you need anything related to auto care, maybe you need a fender bender mended, anything at all, hit up Schoonovers. They're at 1060 County Road E in Shoreview and on the web, schoonoverbodyworks.com.
Zainab Mohammed, who does not, I'm very comfortable in saying, does not believe in the American bedrock principle of property ownership, in her first ever run for office, defeated a Republican guy named Sean Holster to win the Senate seat in District 3. I looked up.
63. Yeah.
She won with 85.8% of the vote.
Jesus.
Wow.
39,063 to Sean Holster's 14% of the vote. Okay. 6,449 people.
You know how off the rails I get with conspiracy-related things. Have you been able to figure out why the lady decided not to rerun for office, why she stepped down out of the way and then endorsed Zainab?
I do not know. I did not do a deep dive on Patricia Ray.
That's a fascinating part of the story to me anyway.
How could, and by the way, part two of today's show will be tomorrow when Sean Holster, who I believe is the current chair of the Minneapolis GOP, such as it is, and I think he'll straighten us out on that.
I spoke with him for about 10 minutes this morning, and I think you are really going to enjoy the conversation.
He'll be in studio tomorrow for part two of this. I want to do this for 2 days. Something critical is at stake here, and that's the bedrock principle of property ownership.
Right.
And I'm only getting wound up here. How could an unknown woman, 26 years old, with no American background whatsoever, except that which would have been created since the age of 9, how could she win such a vast swath of Minneapolis so overwhelmingly? 39,063 votes to 6,449 votes.
Would you call that grassroots or what?
Yes, you in the back.
I have a theory because I wear the tinfoil hat on this show.
Keep your theory brief.
The book that's sitting to Rookie's left. Remember we had that gentleman in the studio a couple of months ago talking about the voting process in the state of Minnesota?
Yes.
That's immediately what I thought of when I saw that voter turnout.
Okay, I'm prepared to get into that in part two of the show tomorrow. Right now, I'm entirely fascinated with
this guy.
Mm-hmm. I'm entirely fascinated by a woman who is essentially unknown. I don't think that's unfair. Now, for some reason, she obviously was not unknown to 85.8% of the people in District 63 who voted.
What year was this?
Well, it's 2022.
Okay.
And she's currently serving.
Interesting demos in 63. Race, total population, 84,000, almost 85,000. White, 66,000. Black or African American, 9,000. American Indian, Native Alaskan, 624. And then it drops off sharply.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting.
How did Zainab M. Mohammed, a young woman with just a degree in human resources and nothing in her background to suggest any familiarity whatsoever with either Minnesota or the United States. Now, let me rephrase that. Possibly that's unfair of me. She's been here since the age of 9, but according to the scant information I do have, She never has had a job in the private sector.
Well, are you trying to say something between the lines, or should I just blurt it out?
Well, you may blurt it out, and let me see if I reject it.
She's been groomed for this position. This is her goal.
All right.
From a young age, to get into politics and to steer things the way she's been steering them right now.
Okay, all
right.
According to Ballotpedia.
I've been through all that this morning.
Did you see the primary election?
Yes. Give us those numbers.
She got 14,073 votes, which was 67.6% over Democrat Todd Scott, who received 6,700 or 32%.
Out of a total population of 84,000? I wonder how many of those 84,000, though, are eligible voters.
That was just the primary.
Yes. Right.
And then
nobody goes to the primary then.
And then in the main, she beat
39,000 votes with 85%, beat Holster. They were the only two.
I've already said that. That's okay. Right.
So that's an active voting base.
Yeah, she beat Sean Holster, who's about, I think, 50 years old,
yeah.
White, Catholic.
No shot.
You're right. No shot whatsoever. But he's in tomorrow for part two. Let's stick to the
DEI got her elected, Joe.
Let's stick to the plan.
She also had a ton of endorsements, so I'm guessing her name got out that way.
From who, John? Do you have
the... Yes, the usual characters. Obviously, the party, Minnesota DFL, the AFL-CIO endorsed her, the Sierra Club endorsed her, Education Minnesota endorsed her, SEIU endorsed her, MNA, which I'm not sure what that is, endorsed her, Friends of the Boundary Waters endorsed her, Emily's List endorsed her, Unidos Minnesota, Stonewall DFL, Women Winning, Run for Something, Out Front Minnesota. You want me to keep going there all, you know.
Okay, that tells me that, and we'll learn more about this in part two tomorrow, that the likes of a Sean Holster, who ran against her, does not stand a chance. This is a setup, and Kenny presumably was right. This is a setup. She was groomed for this. She got the backing of every prominent liberal group in Minnesota. Five will get you 10. This young woman doesn't know where the Boundary Waters is. And she's gotten their support. So what a job the DFL does to win. They're better at this than anybody else.
Not only those endorsements, but there are personal endorsements from all the names that you would know: Representative Jim Davney, Attorney General Keith Ellison, Minneapolis Councilmember Emily Koski, Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, Senator Scott Dibble, Council President Andrea Jenkins, and on and on and on and on.
And this young woman blew the opponent out of the water. This young woman, completely unknown, but quite evidently hand-picked by her betters, got 85.8% of the vote in a very large section of Minneapolis. Why did she get that vote? Because her betters supported her because she's going to represent their deepest wishes. Some of those deepest wishes have nothing to do with the United States we know. They have to do with the United States that is rapidly undergoing change. For example, is it far-fetched to say that they have their sights set on disrupting the sacred bedrock of property ownership? Well, when you consider what's happening around the cities closest to the country's tallest buildings, I don't think it would be surprising to discover that these Marxists wish to upend property ownership. I base that on many people have encountered theft while they're merely shopping at Walgreens or Target, only to discover two things. One, the people working at Target shrug their shoulders and say, it happens all the time. It's becoming normalized. Yep. And two, you have legislative efforts throughout the country that are either eliminating or minimalizing any notion of a crime committed for theft, right? Here's a piece from The Federalist. The Democrats are normalizing property theft. That's giving birth to the squatter crisis.
Right. Wow.
Squatting is a form of trespassing as squatters use properties without the owner's permission or any legal documentation. Nor do squatters offer property owners financial compensation. Atlanta, Georgia is the epicenter of the squatter crisis. Squatters in Atlanta have taken over 1,200 homes.
Wow.
One of the victimized homeowners, Lieutenant Colonel Dahlia Doré, said she felt violated after learning that a squatter with a lengthy criminal history lived in her home rent-free with a fake lease while she was in active duty. In Dallas, Texas, squatters have occupied an estimated 475 homes. Even high-end communities are not free from squatters. In Beverly Hills, a group of squatters took over a $4.3 million mansion, tormented their neighbors with loud all-night parties, and dumped trash all over the property. It took a dramatic police raid to eventually get rid of these settlers. Wow. But haven't we seen in Boston the decriminalization of stealing from a home if no one happens to be at home?
Correct. That was introduced by the mayor, correct?
Yeah.
This squatter crisis is the result of woke Democrats' systemic effort to normalize property theft since the COVID-19 pandemic. Another thing we can blame on this damn pandemic. In April of 2020, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention imposed an eviction ban, even though the agency lacked any legal authority to do that. The ban prevented landlords from collecting rent and evicting tenants. The CDC essentially voided the majority of rental contracts and violated landlords' property rights with the eviction ban. It was supposed to be temporary. However, after Biden became president, his administration renewed the federal eviction ban three times until the U.S. Supreme Court lifted the ban at the end of August 2021. Still, the court decision failed to prevent some Democrat-controlled states and municipalities, such as Alameda County, California, from extending the eviction ban well into 2023, long after the pandemic was over. Besides eviction bans, the left normalized property theft through their defense of looting. In her 2020 book, In Defense of Looting, Vicki Osterweil argues that looting is not an illegal act, but a necessary form of wealth and property redistribution in an unjust society.
Wow.
Let me pause. In the eyes of people who believe that, what constitutes being unjust is having to work for what you have. That's what's unjust.
Yep.
Wow.
Because if you have to work, you are oppressed. And if you have to work at the corner hardware store, the owner of the store is an oppressor. That's their worldview. So the society is unjust to those who believe it constitutes unjustness if you have to work. I would believe, I can't put words in her mouth, but I would believe Zainab Mohammed, who I'm going to come back to shortly, I believe she would be party to that kind of thinking. I had no idea I was going to be this good today. I didn't want to hear that. I'm not done yet.
There's more?
Looting is an illegal, it is not an illegal act, but a necessary form of wealth and property redistribution in an unjust society. Looting gets people what they need for free immediately, which means they are capable of living and reproducing their lives without having to rely on a job.
Congratulations, ladies and gentlemen.
A year after Osterweil's book was published, California's Democrats passed a law to decriminalize robbery. The left's normalization of property theft has been successful because continue to smash, grab, and loot stores in broad daylight. How many videos have we seen of the guy who literally takes a bicycle inside a Walgreens and loads up his plastic bags with stuff and rides it back out? He's never going to be prosecuted.
Nope.
While cops and store clerks have learned to look the other way, retail giants such as Walgreens were forced to shut down some stores in Democrat-controlled cities such as San Francisco. There is a direct link, and I'm pleased that the Federalist uses the word link. There is a direct link between the left's normalization of looting and the current squatter crisis in Democrat-controlled cities. I do not believe that Minneapolis and St. Paul have a squatter crisis yet. I believe the table is being set for it.
Yeah, just ask
New York.
We have
an encampment problem, but not a squatter.
Well, but just ask New York about that problem right now.
I believe that we're setting the table for it, and I believe in the legislature we have placed the right people in position to bring it about. Thus, Zainab Mohammed rejecting a Republican request to be able to notify the sheriff immediately and saying instead that just because they don't have the papers proving their ownership doesn't make them a lesser human being. It has nothing to do with being a lesser human being. That has nothing to do with it. It has to do with property rights, which are earned. It's having to earn them that can be sold to that constituency as being oppressed. We're in a fine
Heap of trouble, huh?
We're in a fine fix here, aren't we? Because it's only going to get deeper because I ain't done.
Oh, boy.
I ain't done.
We had no idea you were going to be this good.
Yes, you did.
You told us.
No. Renewal by Andersen is a J.D. Power Award winner with the highest customer satisfaction among window and patio door manufacturers 4 years in a row. They also have the most five-star reviews in greater Twin Cities among leading full-service window replacement companies. Normally, I wouldn't mention that. Because everyone's touts their bona fides, right? Yep. But on the website at renewalbyanderson.com, you can read the verification of this. This isn't them making that up. This is all true stuff because for years, Minnesotans have known, well, people all over the country have known, that the Andersons and the windows, the patio doors and entry doors by Andersen are the best in the business for beauty, durability, and performance. They have a new window called the Acclaim, engineered and manufactured right here in the metro. You can learn more at renewalbyanderson.com/GarageLogic or call Renewal by Andersen. I see their trucks everywhere. This, if you're going to get windows, this is who you call. Renewal by Andersen, 651-705-6931.
Esteemed town council members, we are headed back to Target Field Thursday, May 9th to play a little hooky. You can join the crew and fellow council members as we take over Target Field when Minnesota takes on Seattle Thursday, May 9th. It's the town council Target Field takeover. Tickets are free for town council members on a first-come, first-served basis. You can claim yours right now at GarageLogic.com. Not a town council member? Well, not a problem. Just join the council, then claim your tickets. You can learn more and claim your tickets right now online at GarageLogic.com.
It's the end of the world as we know it, and he feels fine. Joe Souchere.
You know how I keep hammering on there's always a sale going on at Maple Grove Lock and Safe with Liberty? This time around, it's a tax refund sale. Get 10, 12, or even 15% off on a whole bunch of different units, way too many to mention. You'll get up to $700 savings with this incredible. It's a two-part deal. You get an in-store discount and a matching mail-in rebate on these selected saves. You can see all the deal at the all the details at the newly relaunched MapleGroveLockAndSafe.com website. Rich, the owner, he's 40 years strong now in the business, which means he is easily the best option for all things lock and security related in the metro. The tax refund Liberty Safe rebate sale, it runs through April 29th for GLers. And oh, remember GLers, if you need a small safe to maybe keep on the nightstand or the desk drawer or the vehicle, Rich always offers GLers a 15% off discount on all small, quick combo and key vaults. They're very handy, and they keep your firearms safe around the home, the car, the office, whatever. Maple Grove Lock and Safe, 6901 East Fish Lake Road, right there in Maple Grove, and that fancy new website for the Liberty Safe details, MapleGroveLockAndSafe.com.
In part one, we've discovered the woman named Zainab Mohammed. She represents Senate District 63 in Minneapolis, and she said in response to Republicans in the legislature wishing to make it easier to remove a squatter, she said, just because you don't have the documentation does not make you lesser than as a human being. We then discovered that she's a first-time senator, first time she's won a political office. She defeated a fellow named Sean Holster, 39,063 votes to 6,449 votes. In part two of the show tomorrow, we'll have Sean Holster live in studio to pursue the thoughts that what we have here is a major, I think, a major revolution brewing when it comes to property ownership. And maybe he has thoughts about that. Here is John Haidt.
Thank you, Joe. This news brought to you by North American Banking Company. A couple, I was going to open this by saying we have a couple breaking stories this morning. Then I realized we're a podcast.
We're a podcast.
Nobody cares if they're breaking stories because they might listen at midnight tonight.
Yeah.
So,
or next
in
week.
The news, or next week, exactly. Right. Or in the news. Let's just start that way. Jurors have found Nikolai Mew guilty on lesser counts in a deadly stabbing on the Apple River in 2022. The 54-year-old Mew was charged with first-degree homicide, attempted first-degree homicide, and battery charges stemming from the incident, which killed 17-year-old Isaac Schumann and hurt four others. However, if jurors found the evidence didn't reach the level of those charges, they could also consider lesser charges, and that's what happened. That was the key, as the jurors unanimously found Mew guilty on all lesser accounts. That would be first-degree reckless homicide, four counts of first-degree recklessly endangering safety and battery. Not the five highest charges he faced. It comes after 7 hours of deliberations. However, he still could end up serving a lot of time for those charges. In fact, if he were to get the maximum on all of them, he could be sentenced up to 100 years. So
on the lesser charges?
Yeah. On the lesser charges, yes. Yep. His lawyer said he was surprised, respectfully disappointed with the verdict, but acknowledged the jurors were tasked with it, added that Mew was obviously disappointed. Mew's sentencing will take place at a later time. He left court escorted by deputies.
I hope we can be done seeing the videos now on the news.
Yeah, I'm sick of that.
I'm tired of it.
Yeah. 4 weeks after formally approving a controversial rideshare ordinance by overriding the mayor's veto, and less than 3 weeks before it was set to take effect, the Minneapolis City Council has now unanimously moved to delay the measure's start date. They did that this morning, the council voting to push the effective date of the ordinance that sets minimum pay requirements from May 1st to July 1st. Several council members announced and expressed support for the two-month delay on Wednesday, saying they thought it would help support up-and-coming rideshare companies that are trying to get licensed in Minnesota. While many companies have expressed interest in trying to fill the void that will be created if Uber and Lyft leave the city, a data request shows that four companies had actually applied to be licensed in the city as of April 4th, with those applications in various stages. Those companies are Move, Joyride, My Wheels, and Rides. The city has said it can take between 2 to 6 weeks for approval.
Suddenly, it's easy for me to look at everything through the lens of property ownership. The city council completely screwed up, or attempted to screw up, two privately run businesses, only to discover they better back off now because they got so much heat about it.
They like to meddle. Government does in every portion of private life.
But they're not qualified to. These are incompetent people who have no idea how business works.
And the same thing is happening on the state level with the new cannabis nonsense. And it's about to happen on the state level with the laughing gas that we discovered up on the Iron Range.
Helium.
Helium. Yeah, and they're going to step in and start regulating and making rules about shit they don't know anything about. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing the amount of meddling they can do.
Update on those shootings in Minnetonka. We talked about yesterday, two Hennepin County Sheriff's deputies sustaining non-life-threatening injuries and a 28-year-old man dead after an exchange of gunfire. The deputies were executing a warrant in the West Metro suburb around 11:18 in the morning when the gunfight broke out, according to Hennepin County Sheriff Dewana Witt. One of the deputies was transported to the hospital for what she called very serious injuries. The other was treated for injuries resulting from gunfire and released at the scene. Law enforcement leaders at the news conference yesterday declined to provide any details as to what happened, including what started the whole shooting or how the armed individual died. Okay. Officials did not release the name of the man who died, but the Star Tribune confirmed his identity late Wednesday afternoon as Clint Hoytia, and his father, Thomas Hoytia, said it was suicide by cop. That's what it is. That's his quote. He owns the home where the exchange of gunfire occurred. More than a half dozen people, including the aforementioned Hennepin County Sheriff, Dewana Witt, have filed a lawsuit against Hennepin County, citing the lack of action taken by county leaders when complaints were filed against former Sheriff Dave Hutchinson during his term by employees of the sheriff's office. Witt, as well as Timothy Stout, the current chief of staff for the sheriff's office, are two of the seven current and former sheriff's office employees listed as plaintiffs on the complaint against the county. The lawsuit lists a total of five charges: race discrimination, sexual orientation discrimination, retaliation, reprisal discrimination, and negligent supervision. According to the suit, the employees worked in an environment they said was filled with bigotry and fear, and Hutchinson's behavior was repeatedly reported to the county, which didn't address his conduct. The complaint goes on to say the former sheriff regularly used derogatory terms regarding race and sexual orientation, among others. He also reportedly would wave a loaded weapon around while talking about killing people who crossed him, according to the document.
Wow.
Which stated the plaintiffs believed they were, in their words, sitting ducks at work and would be victims of a mass shooting by Hutchinson. County leaders, according to the suit, allegedly did not take any action regarding the former sheriff's behavior, according to the complaint.
Why didn't they bring this up years ago?
They tried.
Oh.
And the county, that's what the whole thing is about. The county ignored it. He's getting help, isn't he? That sounds like a man who has serious issues that needs a whole hell of a lot of help.
I was just about to ask, what did he end up doing? I mean, did he get a cushy gig?
I have no idea.
Oh.
Have you seen the footage of our new sheriff on TV the last couple of days in association with this story?
Yeah.
She looks like somebody that you don't want to trifle with even a little bit.
No, I don't ever want to be on her wrong side.
She looks very serious, and you will pay for your smart mouth.
She looks, you know what she looks like? Sturdy.
Yeah, right. Badass.
Sturdy.
She is a badass.
When you come home and you greet her at the back door and she says, did you remember the milk and bread?
You
just freeze. You don't know what to do.
You turn around and go get it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
The election's, of course, still more than 6 months away, but according to a new KSTP Survey USA poll, Republicans have edged into a nominal lead in a generic race pitting Democrats against Republicans in Minnesota. Republicans haven't controlled the House of Reps here since 2018, but might be in a position to take back control and break up the DFL trifecta in the 2024 elections. When likely voters were asked if they're generally more inclined to vote for a Republican, Democrat, or candidate from another party, 45% said they prefer Republicans, 44 Democrats, 8% undecided, and 3% preferred another party altogether. Republicans lead by 3 points in the suburbs, 45 to 42, and by 8 points among independents, 39 to 27. That's a vast improvement for the GOP after last month when the same poll showed Democrats with an 8-point lead among suburban voters and a 7-point lead among independents.
If the trifecta is not broken up, there will be no more Minnesota. It'll be Minnesota Stan or Minnesota Sedalia or something. There will be no Minnesota if this trifecta keeps up. It will not exist.
The center, I hope, will not hold.
Yeah, it hasn't held. It's not holding.
It'd be nice in their discussions if they'd hear things from all sides of the aisle.
Yeah, well, they don't.
It's so ridiculous the way it is now.
And a Burnsville grocery store owner has pleaded guilty to a fraud charge in the Feeding Our Future case. 53-year-old Hoda Ali Abdi of Burnsville charged in February with one count of conspiracy to commit wire fraud. She is the 18th defendant to plead guilty in the case, admitting in federal court on Wednesday that she submitted fake invoices collecting more than $1 million in federal reimbursements for claiming to provide food as a vendor and serve meals at her distribution site children in need.
Will she get two slaps on the wrist or just one?
Well, she has no criminal history, Chris.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I mean,
I'm sure she's very sorry for this.
Yeah.
And how the $1 million ended up in her bank account, she's just puzzled by that.
I just need to travel quick to go help out a cousin.
Yeah. I'll be back in 30.
John, has there been any mention about sentencing or what could possibly happen to her?
Yes, there has. Thank you for asking, Kitty. Almost like we planned that, but we didn't.
Well, we got a little off track there.
Thank you. Abdi could face 24 to 30 months in prison. She also could owe nearly $1.3 million in restitution. That is the amount of money she received in the scheme from 2021 to 2023.
Well, she'll have to sell her Escalades and then try to pay us back.
Yeah, there's no shot she'll ever be able to pay us back.
Right.
Unless she can grift somebody else.
Why don't we take a quick break here, and we'll have national international news for you right after we hear from our buddy, the rookie.
Thank you, Johnny. I would like to tell you about the fine folks over at Welter Heating. They're online at welterheating.com, and for the last 120 years, the Welter family has been doing a fantastic job of heating your homes, making your homes comfortable, cool, all sorts of great stuff. So please do me a favor and check out their website. It's welterheating.com. That's welterheating.com. Remember that the 120 years means technology has changed quite a bit, so their techs are all certified, and they change with the time. They are up to date, and they can help you with your rattling heating unit, cooling unit, air purification system, whatever the case may be. But they're not going to cold call you. You call them if you have a problem or a question, 612-825-6867. Four generations have been helping Twin City people all over the metro area, and they know their stuff. So if there's a problem, go to the website, welterheating.com. If you're not sure what it is, click on the blog icon, and you may have your answer right there, free of charge. But if it's making funny noises or you want to give it a tune-up for the spring or this summer, your AC unit, treat it with care. It's Welter Heating. Can air condition or heat your shelter with the fine folks at Ray and Welter. Let's see if he can find
the Earth is not your mother. The Joe Soucheray Show.
I'm trying to figure out who this sounds like. What was the band Frank Black was in? That's who it sounds like.
I don't know.
Pixies.
Pixies. Yeah. Is this the Pixies?
No, it's not.
Survey boys, you guys are running. Usually you run 1 to 2 weeks ahead of us up here. Has anybody down there heard the all-American drone of a lawnmower yet?
Yes.
You have?
I have.
Over the weekend.
That is fantastic. That means you guys are living close to professionalturf.com customers, because everybody who signed up knows that all you have to do is click on that website and schedule a free lawn analysis, and they'll send out an experienced service tech, assess your lawn, customize a slow release fertilizer and weed control plan, environmentally safe, of course, but more importantly, in my world, guaranteed for superior results from early April until snowfall, basically, and that beautiful lawn. We're talking here, no crabgrass, no dandelions, no broadleaf weeds, free of all weeds, and it simply starts with a visit to ProfessionalTurf.com. While you're on that website, do a little surfing around, click deep in the tabs, and you'll see some of these really cool landscape projects that Professional Turf has pulled off. Really amazing. And if you have an irrigation system in your place, ProTurf, they can service that for you. They can wake it up. They can do repairs, put it to bed in the fall. They do it all, lawn care, landscape, and irrigation. That website, ProfessionalTurf.com.
In fact, Kenny, it was the shortest time for yours truly in between hearing the lawnmower, because you guys remember how warm it was on Christmas Eve. It was in the mid-50s. And I don't think he mind me sharing this publicly. My buddy next door neighbor, Rob, was celebrating, going, "Gotta say I did it on New Year's Eve or Christmas Eve."
He was mowing? Cut the grass?
He was cutting his grass.
Hey, is it a competition with you guys down there?
100%.
Yeah, me and my neighbor.
Not me.
No, we know you're a skirt wearing. You don't care about that. You're more concerned with what's on the menu tonight. But me and my neighbor, Andy Boy, we went at it every year with the competition.
Did you walk? And if so, how often did you have to sit down?
Wow.
You bring a lawn chair out there, do a path, and then sit down?
I had a self-propelled lawnmower, and I would pull myself around on my shop stool, you know?
Yeah.
I'd just sit on the shop stool and let the mower pull me around.
In other news, O.J. Simpson, who became well known for his football skills.
Really?
And then for the trial where he was accused of killing ex-wife Nicole Simpson and Ron Goldman, has died.
Good riddance.
It was reported back in February that O.J. was being treated for prostate cancer.
He was murdered by cancer.
That's what I heard.
That's what Caitlyn Jenner said about O.J.
Murdered by cancer?
Good riddance.
Good riddance, yeah.
Simpson was 76 years old.
And there's Charles Woodson. How about that? What a season he had. Great, Manny. He became the first defensive player to win the Heisman Trophy. And congratulations, Charles. That is something that no one can ever take away from you. Unless you kill your wife and a waiter, in which case...
Who had the idea that the funeral hearse should be the white Bronco?
Sales guy Rob sent me a tweet, but I don't know who to credit
it
to.
If I had a white Bronco, I would find out where that procession is.
And then just
would,
drive along.
Right, drive along nice and slow.
In other news, remember the looks Norm got when he told that?
One of the greatest moments in the history of ESPN, and he was never asked.
So OJ killed two people, right?
The wife and the waiter.
And the waiter.
USA Today Sports tweets out, former football star, actor, and sportscaster O.J. Simpson dies at 76. It's kind of praiseworthy.
How about murder?
Don't you remember there was a trial, and I believe
he was acquitted. Yeah, blah, blah, blah.
The glove didn't fit.
Yeah, but the civil trial, if you look at...
They finally got him on stealing sports memorabilia.
They screwed that up, too,
Yeah.
Ended up in prison.
Someone reposted the Tim Meadows Saturday Night Live bit where he's pretending to be OJ doing the game with the telestrator. Oh. And he writes out the play. Well, this guy does the button hook. And he writes out, I did it.
Do you know what OJ stands for?
What?
I do.
Horseshoes.
John does.
Horseshoes.
Orenthal James?
Oh, boy.
So are you, wait a minute, I'm confused here. Are you telling me that you don't believe in the criminal justice system, that the criminal justice system may have made a mistake?
I believe that they may have made a mistake.
Those gloves fit to a T.
I think they messed this one up.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Have you ever heard of a guy named Derek Chauvin?
Yep. And the criminal justice system may have made a mistake.
He just got stabbed, 22 times?
Well, that's not his most recent trouble. Mm. He's had all his papers stolen or something.
Oh, that's right. He was copying right there, gone.
In other news, three sons of Hamas's most senior political leader, Ismail Haniyeh, were killed Wednesday in an Israeli airstrike in the Gaza Strip, according to relatives and Hamas media channels. Haniyeh, a billionaire, himself acknowledged the death of more family members. He warned Israel it would not break the resolve of the people. In a statement released yesterday, the Israeli Defense Forces said it killed three Hamas military operatives. The IDF said that Amir Haniyeh was a cell commander in the Hamas military wing, although Mohammed Haniyeh and Hazim Haniyeh were military operatives. Hamas said the strike hit a vehicle near a home belonging to the Haniyeh family.
How did this guy get to be a billionaire? Do we know?
I read this once and I don't recall. I'm sorry. I wish I did. But the fact that he just stays in neutral places and is a billionaire and directs all this chaos.
What's his name? Oh, look, John.
It's Haniyeh. Haniyeh. And first name is Ismail.
Got it. Thank you.
David Hume Kennerly, the Pulitzer Prize-winning photographer, resigned as trustee of the Gerald R. Ford Presidential Foundation yesterday, citing the group's decision not to give former Rep. Liz Cheney its annual medal for distinguished public service as the reason for his departure. Kennerly was the chief White House photographer during President Ford's administration, said in a letter to the foundation the board rejected Cheney's nomination because some members feared possible repercussions if former President Trump won the White House back in November. Kennerly says the historical irony of the situation was apparently lost on the foundation, saying Gerald Ford became president in part because Richard Nixon had ordered the development of an enemies list and demanded his underlings use the IRS against those listed. He continued, that's exactly what the executive committee fears will happen if there's a second coming of Donald Trump. Campaign staffer for independent presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. terminated this week after causing some controversy. You may have seen the video. She told a group of Republican voters that beating President Joe Biden was her number one priority, and she encouraged them to volunteer for Donald Trump. Well, yesterday, RFK Jr.'s campaign manager, Amaryllis Kennedy, confirmed in a statement that Rita Palmer's contract had been terminated for misrepresentation. Arguing that he was not subject to arrest, a Florida man told police he was allowed to be drunk and disorderly and sitting naked in a trash can on the sidewalk. Hmm. St. Petersburg cops alleged that 35-year-old Wiley Weeks was drunk, unsteady on his feet, and smelled of booze when they discovered him in the trash can late Saturday night downtown. Weeks was extricated, no clothes, from a corner trash can and arrested for disorderly intoxication and resisting an officer without violence, both of which are misdemeanors. Weeks also told arresting officers he did not have to provide officers with his name or demographics.
Was he trying to throw himself away?
Apparently, huh? Yeah. I don't know. He's
What are you, a bunch of aristocrats? Who hasn't been there? Come on, man.
He's a living Oscar the Grouch.
Yeah. You bunch of snobs. Yeah, I can't believe who I work with here. Wow.
He's got a long rap sheet. Theft, disorderly conduct, panhandling, criminal mischief, and other misdemeanor convictions. One of his other arrests came when he and a friend walked out of a bar in Tampa and took off all their clothes. When they were arrested in that case, he told police they just thought it would be funny if they walked around naked.
All he needs to do is go find an empty house where somebody's on vacation.
Yep. Squat.
Move in there. Right. He's got himself a place.
I have another naked man story, too, oddly enough. This one in New Mexico.
Oh, do tell.
I didn't know you were looking for them.
A naked man arrested.
The stories of the guys.
The stories. Oh.
After allegedly pulling a light fixture off a home and assaulting a police officer. 24-year-old Elijah Paul DeArmond was arrested after La Cruces police officers found him completely naked and banging on the front door of a home. Court documents reported that he arrived at the home naked and began hitting the door. The homeowner told DeArmond to leave the property, and he allegedly then became disorderly, ripped the light fixture off the front porch, broke the front glass door by throwing a rock at it. The suspect is also accused of breaking the front window, maybe with his hands, because his hands were bleeding when police got there. When officers got to the scene, they shined their spotlight on him. He ran toward a patrol vehicle. DeArmond knelt on the ground and allegedly grabbed an officer who was trying to detain him. Yes?
I'm waiting till you're done. I'm raising my hand.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you might.
No, when I raise my hand, it means I'm going to speak when you're done.
Well, I see. Well, then I'll just keep talking. Yeah, okay. The officer then shoved DeArmond to the ground, and two officers arrested him. Yes,
sir. Did you guys see the picture of the fellow in Montana who was parading a wolf around his local saloon, and he had duct taped the wolf's mouth shut, and then he was going to kill it. He killed it. But
it was still alive when he was parading it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And then the last time I saw it was the wolf was dying in the bar. It was suffering.
Oh, my God.
Shoot the guy. Not the wolf.
Oh, you're one of those liberals.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I don't think you have to be a liberal.
That's going to go over really well in northern Minnesota with the GIs.
You don't get to torture the animal.
You don't get to torture animals. Kill them all you want, but don't torture them.
Montana.
No,
what was the name of the bar?
I don't know. It's all over the Daily Mail every day. Every day they got a new picture. God. The wolf's still there in the bar, and he's still alive.
Well, I don't understand. What's the intention?
The guy was showing off to his buddies.
This is why.
I got me a wolf here, but I haven't shot it yet. Yeah. So he drags the wolf into the bar. His mouth is duct taped shut, so he can't eat any of these idiots.
This is why when ISIS invades us or China invades us, this is why we're going to win.
Because
of rednecks like that'll go to those lengths.
No, you don't get to torture animals. Sorry.
See, now the other side of that coin, Candy, this is why the country will no longer exist never mind.
No, I don't get your point.
If you hurt animals, you'll hurt people.
Okay, Dahmer, whatever you say. Come on, man.
Wow.
Where do you get the wolf here?
I didn't think I'd come under attack advocating that we don't torture animals.
The wolf is on par with Satan himself.
No, he's not. No, he's not.
I have a confession to make, Joe.
Yeah, you've done the same thing up in Bismarck?
Well, no, I saw this story 2 days ago.
Yeah.
I purposely didn't bring it in because I thought somebody like Kenny
could
come forward with those viewers.
How about, can we just at least light their tails on fire and then set them loose?
No.
Give them a chance anyway. With their mouth duct tape shut.
I have no trouble with the guy shooting the wolf.
You know what would be fun?
I got a big problem with him bringing it into the bar.
Obviously, I'm joking and being a jackass on purpose, but it would be a really fun and interesting discussion if we, in fact, talked about what's happening in Minnesota with wolves, because it's a hot button issue right now.
I understand.
It's well, I can
provide the latest because I know Towns is supposed to play before the playoffs start. But other than that, I don't really know what else I'm going to be able to help.
I'm all for shooting a wolf if he's stealing your cows, but I'm not for torturing the wolf.
It's all about the judges. Right. That's why they're endangered right now. It has nothing to do with the wolf population. It has everything to do with the judges who decided that they were, you know. Yeah.
All right, then.
The wolves were to be protected.
Well, yeah, they're calling them endangered. And even the Department of Minnesota Department, everybody disagrees with the judge. Everybody. Mm-hmm. Except the do-gooders and the tree-huggers and this one judge.
Well, John, you tried your best.
They've decimated the deer population. They've decimated everything up north, including cattle.
The deer population is hardly decimated.
Oh.
Not in the city of St. Paul.
I mean...
Did I say St. Paul?
Bring wolves to St. Paul.
Northern Minnesota.
Bring the wolves to the urban center.
We're about to get a whole bunch of emails from Northern Minnesota,
Kenny,
regarding this.
Joe says the deer population's fine because he's seen one in St. Paul.
I seen one the other day.
Them ain't the
I
same seen ones. One.
I yeah. seen three of them across the street.
No, them ain't the same ones.
That's the same deer.
Were they having lunch at Cassetta's or something?
No, they seen them all over.
Even the Department of Natural Resources says the population is okay.
Okay.
But it doesn't matter.
All right, thank you. Goodbye.
I didn't think you'd spur
Take
this
break,
conversation,
please.
Did you, Joe?
North American Banking Company. I've
seen
them.
Something I thought was, you know.
Guess what? I seen them yesterday, Banking Company.
Yeah.
Yep, I had to stop in and make a quick deposit. Listen, it's banking done differently, plain and simple. They started back in 1998, and when they first opened, they made a promise to deliver a better banking experience for their customers, where you know your banker and they know you. And while a lot has changed since then, this commitment to being a true community bank in the Twin Cities, that has not. North American Banking Company invests in the people, businesses, and organizations that make the Twin Cities a great place to be. And they get it. They realize that there's no shortage of banking options here in the Twin Cities. So if you're tired of just being a number to your big national bank, then be sure to check out my friends at North American Banking Company. 6 locations to serve you. Roseville, 50th and France, Hastings, Woodbury, Shoreview, and their new location in Maple Grove. They offer the same online and mobile banking options as the other banks, but with the unparalleled service of a community bank. They are also locally owned and operated. Here's why that's a big deal. That means loan decisions are made quickly, right here in the Twin Cities, not sent out of state. So this helps business owners solve problems and expand their business with confidence. NABankCo.com to learn more. NABankCo.com to learn more. North American Banking Company member FDIC is an equal housing lender. Joe, are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
God.
You cannot stop him. He'll just make a move. Joe Sugeray.
Serious crap over so I can be part of the show again?
No.
Oh, we're serious. We have all these problems in the United States and the world.
Why are you doing the Cookie Monster voice?
I don't know. I'm Grover.
Yesterday I suggested that the people over on, was it Fifth Avenue, who are experiencing a homeless encampment near them now?
Yes.
I said, get the neighbors together and threaten to withhold all your property taxes.
How's
that?
Good plan.
Scott from Inver Grove, who knows a little bit about that business, writes, theoretically, I am totally on board with your sentiment to have Minnesota taxpayers start refusing to pay property taxes unless Hennepin County starts cracking down on the plethora of cellar dwellers who are infesting their neighborhoods. However, in reality, when a homeowner refuses to pay the property's property taxes, the county patiently and systematically charges interest and penalties. The county will file a tax judgment against the property while continuing to assess interest and penalties for a period of 3 years, known as the redemption period. During the 3 years, the homeowner can redeem the property by paying all the taxes, interest, and penalties and any legal expenses incurred. Otherwise, the homeowner can enter into a confession of judgment, which is a pre-established payment plan for a length of time. If the homeowner chooses not to do that, the county will take over the ownership of the property. The county can either sell it at auction or they can use it for public use. the homeowner would still have the opportunity to buy the house at auction, but it's obvious by not redeeming the property over the course of 3 years, the homeowner probably doesn't have the money. The old saying, you can't fight City Hall, is fact-based. It's for that reason that the third rail continues to pillage the taxpayers, and there's not a damn thing we can do about it. Never so, afraid and always pushing back, Scott, from Indian Grove.
The reason you were so mean to me then during that last commercial break was because you knew, and of course you're not going to say it because you're not a man, but you knew that yesterday when this topic came up, Kenny was right and Joe was wrong once again. And that's why you were just so mean to me during that last break. You can't face the fact that I'm smarter than you, dummy.
Yes, you were right yesterday, and I was wrong. I was wrong if you were offended.
Yeah, and the next time I tip somebody $100 on a $300 bill, I'm going to take a picture of it and send it to you.
There's not a place within 50 miles of where that farmhouse where you live in the basement where there's a dining establishment that would cost $300.
You know what I've learned since moving up here? They do accept muskrat skins as tips.
Oh, they do? You still got supper clubs where you got to bring your own bottle and your own silverware and stuff and sit at kind of like a picnic table?
Well, once again, regarding not paying your taxes, Kenny was right. Joe was wrong.
See, it is Thursday, isn't it? Do you want a little ray of hope?
Yeah.
Please.
Here's today's
I thought you were going to say, the show's going to end. That's the ray of hope.
Long-time listener, first-time contributor, I wanted to share a small ray of hope from our Southwest Suburb Middle School. We received an email the other day from our child's math teacher that they were going to a conference and needed the assistance of a substitute teacher for a Thursday and Friday 8th grade math class. This was all normal communication. However, we were delighted to see the approach to behavior control and accountability when the teacher is not around. Here is an excerpt from that communication that I think you will appreciate. From the teacher, I wanted to let you know that I will be gone this Thursday and Friday at a math conference. I have not been gone from school this year, so I want to make sure I am upfront about my expectations. I expect that all our kids will treat our subs with the utmost respect. If their name is written down to someone who could not handle having a guest teacher, I will be pulling them from their first hour class on Monday morning, and they will be calling you to let you know about their behavior. They will also be serving lunch detention with me for as many days as it takes to write a meaningful and well-written apology. Thank you for having a conversation with your child and reminding them how important it is to treat our guests and adults with respect. Wow. This guy doesn't want his name used. I hope you find this as welcoming as we did in a small ray of hope. We still have educators out there teaching curriculum accountability and consequences. Consequences. Now we can only hope that if a parent happens to receive a call on Monday, they also act on the accountability and consequences. Take care and good luck. Blank from a Southwest suburb. Huh. And I think we should give this guy the
ray of hope.
Ray of hope.
Here's today's ray of hope.
God, I hope that's real. Yeah. I hope that's real.
I think it is.
Oh, I love that.
Otherwise, he would have allowed me to use his name. Renewal by Anderson brings you Only Because.
Only Because what?
Only Because they come to us all the way from Apache Junction, Arizona, in this case. Hmm. From the Traveling Lymans. We didn't do diddly on this day as Minnesota.
We got nothing?
One thing.
We're stretching it.
One thing got accomplished on this day. On this day,
April 11th,
and you have to go back to 1680.
Who was here in 1680?
Father Louis Hennepin.
Oh.
Explored the Mississippi River north from Illinois by canoe. He was captured by a group of Dakota. During his captivity, he saw Ouamni Yamni, which he called the Falls of Anthony for his patron saint. Hmm. On July 25, Daniel Gracelon, the Sieur de Loup, arrange for Hennepin's release. Hmm. The Sieur Duluth. We've been through that before. Yeah. He was like the king of Duluth or
Sieur
something. Yeah. There's now a club up there, kind of a neat building where they have the, I think it's called the Gray Salon.
Great. Sewer is in French for like the high over.
I got that part. Yeah, he was the head guy in Duluth.
Yeah, you got it.
And he let Hennep and Louis go.
Right.
And that's it for today. Otherwise, nothing happened on this day.
Do you think the St. Anthony Falls, as they currently are an embarrassment? I mean, they're not falls. It looks man-made.
Well, they're not man-made.
No, it's concrete.
No, they're not. It's got damn rocks.
Go look at it. Go down there and look at it. They're flowing over. It'd be like a water flowing over the Ford Dam. Same thing. It's man-made.
I don't think St. Anthony Falls is man-made. Yeah,
get down there and look at it sometime. When's the last time you were down there? Here's what I'm proposing.
Minnehaha Falls?
The city. Yeah. No, not Minnehaha. I said St. Anthony.
No, Cannon Falls.
Oh, wait. He said St. Anthony.
I said St. Anthony Falls.
Where are they?
Downtown Minneapolis.
Oh, yeah. Them are man-made.
By that nice bridge.
Here's what I propose.
I seen those falls.
Yeah. Here's what we're going to do. The city of Minneapolis is going to hire ProfessionalTurf.com. Their landscaping division is going to come in there and create a realistic St. Anthony Falls.
Make it look like a falls.
Yes.
Isn't St. Anthony Falls by that old bridge?
It is the only natural major waterfall in the Mississippi. Through the mid to late 80s, various dams were built atop the east and west faces of the falls to support the milling industry that spurred the growth of the city of Minneapolis. In 1880, the central face of the falls was reinforced with a sloping timber apron to stop the upstream erosion of the falls. So they have been messed with.
Yep.
Does anyone on this staff know anything about Rainy Lake up in International Falls?
Great houseboating. Seriously.
I've never been there,
and a guy gave me last night one of those picture book historicals of that area.
Oh, Golden Books?
The Pillsbury's had a big mansion there. All kinds of a summer place.
You haven't even been to Hinckley. Why should we be surprised that you haven't been to Rainy Lake?
I've been through Hinckley. I see no reason to stop.
Oh, you flew over it once.
No, I didn't fly over it. I drove through it. Right on the, I seen it from the freeway.
Yeah, them ain't the same falls, though.
Like I was saying.
There's a lot of, they had a lot of that paper milling up at International Falls. They might still.
That their paper milling?
That's right. Rainy Lake, as I read the book, half's in Canada and half's in the United States.
You know what else they have up there, Joe? Hmm. They have a wolf problem.
Well, I hope they're not parading them into bars and then laughing about the torture that the wolf's undergoing.
The level of Rainy Lake is controlled at the hydroelectric powerhouses of the International Dam that spans the Rainy River between International Falls and Fort Francis.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that it was controlled.
I met a guy last night who was a 1956 grad of International Falls High School.
Holy moly, he's old.
Well, he's about 85, 86. Huh?
What are they, the Fallers?
No, the Broncos.
Oh, Broncos, thank you. Save me a look.
Just like OJ.
Wow.
Well, he was a Bill.
Orenthal.
A Buffalo Bill.
No, but he
Bill.
Was in the Bronco when, you know.
He was in the Bronco.
The chase, yeah.
Well, I'm glad you guys kept your mouth shut during part one of today's show.
I can't guarantee that tomorrow. I will not be silenced like this.
Yes,
this
you will.
BS.
Part two tomorrow with Sean Holster, who ran against Zayab Muhammad and lost handily.
I have a lot of political puns for 63, the district.
Do you?
Yeah, tomorrow.
So thank you, GLers. We'll do part two tomorrow on this budding revolution of property ownership. I think it's coming, I dare say.
If that wasn't a tease, I don't know what was.
Did Kenny leave already?
I think he did.
GLers, join the thousands who have already joined us on YouTube. That's right. If you can't get enough of Garage Logic, join the GLers who have found us by searching for Garage Logic Podcast, and you can subscribe. It's free for nearly daily content, including behind-the-scenes content, full segments and video shorts. It's just that easy. It's just called Garage Logic Podcast, and it's right there on the YouTubes. It is time once again that we check in with our guy, Mr. Money Talk. Josh Arnold is with us once again here in Garage Logic. And now is the time for you to do the same. So do not delay. Do exactly what I did and pick up that phone and dial 952-925-5608. That number once again is 952-925-5608. You call that number, you get Josh. And he is there for you once again for that free, yes, I said the word free, 48-minute financial initial consultation with absolutely zero obligation, and he will always give you the straight talk. He will never give you sugar-coated advice, and he's on the line with us once again here in Garage Logic. And boy, Josh, you got a lot to discuss today. So I know, you know, we're not worried about OJ because it's Masters Week, but boy, there are some concerns about the Fed, and you would also like to touch on earnings today.
Well, OJ did pass away from cancer. There are probably a lot of people happy about that, but that is something from a long time ago. He was a super running back and maybe not so nice of a person. The Masters, a lot of rain down there, and you have some plenty of betting favorites out there, and that should be a nice boost or continued boost to companies like FanDuel, owned by Flutter, and favorite DraftKings. Both stocks have come off from their highs after a very, very big Final Four and a super March Madness, both in the men's and especially in the women's. Going to be some big changes, I'll say, watching TV sports next season, particularly as the women generated more television revenue and television viewers than did the men. Part of that could be the attraction of all-time scoring leader, Caitlin Clark. That's all-time as in all-time scoring leader. She's on both the men's and the women's side. Very, very exciting to watch. And she packed the house and helped boost women's sports overall. Say that's a big plus for Title IX, but that's another story that we can talk about in another time with some of my issues with Title IX. But speaking of titles, the Federal Reserve has a big title right now, and that to me is will remain higher for longer. And I know that I've been talking about higher for longer as a Fed mantra for at least a year and a half. And do bear in mind with all of the talking heads saying before the year started that the Fed was going to cut up to 7 times this year, I don't know what they saw, but at the beginning of the year, I didn't see any reason for the Fed to cut other than to show the markets they could do that without upsetting the apple cart and without seeing the economy slow down or even tip into a recession. I don't foresee right now, given the overall strength of the economy, with the GDP numbers still positive, with employment still up. So we could debate that issue as we'll say, job participation rate is still stuck at 62.5%. So there are a lot of people who aren't working, or maybe there are an awful lot of people who are taking several part-time jobs that may not be counted in the overall count, or there are a lot of people working, we'll say, off books. But in any case, the market is concerned with the Fed inflation numbers coming out this week. The CPI, which came out yesterday, showed an increase in inflation that scared a lot of machines, and the algorithms sold everything off. And I think that's missing really what's going on in the market and within a lot of companies. Hence, with the new earnings season kicking off tomorrow with banks reporting, I'm going to be concentrating more on earnings than on worrying about the Fed. Now, with banks, I'm not a bank investor, as I have said. I've avoided banks. I'll leave that to others. The major banks report next week or tomorrow. I think they'll do okay. They'll show that lending is still up. People are still borrowing, and they're still making money off their bond and probably stock trading. The smaller banks or the regional banks, however, it's another story. But they are going to have to pay up for deposits, and that's going to put a crimp in their earnings, not to mention many of those regional banks are still carrying bonds with lower yields. And if they are marked to market, they're going to show or continue showing losses. Bear in mind something we talked about the other day. Bond, and this is one of my things or one of the reasons I don't like investing in bonds, they're going to track primarily with interest rates. As interest rates go up, we'll say yields go up, bond values go down. In 2022, the long bond index, TLT, lost a third of its value, about the same as the NASDAQ index. The NASDAQ index last year was up 40%, and TLT was down. NTLT is still down this year as interest rates have not gone down. Interest rates have stayed up. So that's going to impact negatively banks, in my estimation, and several other businesses as well. But concentrating on earnings, which means companies have got to continue raising their sales and cutting costs and or buying back shares to keep those earnings numbers going in a positive direction. Plus, the other thing to watch and listen for is guidance into the next quarter and into the next year. And if you really want to pay a little bit more attention, start reading some of the CEO's letters to shareholders, including Amazon, whose CEO Andy Jassy released his annual letter to shareholders today. He stated that Amazon is operating like the world's biggest startup. Yes, they are still spending money, but they're spending money on artificial intelligence and artificial intelligence build out while cutting costs in other areas. Amazon has had a lot of success building up their Prime unit and adding to it Prime Sports. So those are some things that I want to pay attention to over the next several weeks.
And that's why we come to you for that sound advice, Mr. Money Talk. Well, you heard him, GLers. Now is the time for you to pick up the phone and make that call for that free 48-minute financial consultation at 952-925-5608. Like I said, you will always get the straight talk and never, ever sugar-coated advice. Josh, as always, thank you so much for the time and the chat. Enjoy the rest of your day. Have a fantastic warm weekend, and we will talk to you again next week.
Thank you.
Investment services offered by Josh Arnold Investment Consultant, LLC, a security investment advisor. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All investments involve risk. All comments and opinions are Josh Arnold's and do not constitute investment advice.
Chris Reavers is a paid endorser.